What is vegetarianism? Some consider it to be a good, healthy diet. To some, it is ethical, and to others, it is the purest way to attain spiritual enlightenment. A vegetarian eating plan, also known as plant-based eating, is based on a diet of grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. This style of eating has existed since the beginning of recorded history. A vegetarian movement was founded in Rome as early as 600 BCE. From the Christian Bible to the Upanishads, from the ancient writings of Plato to the beliefs of the early Egyptians, a vegetarian diet was expounded as a diet of choice for a peaceful and healthful existence, both physically and spiritually. Ancient masters and sages, and the world's greatest and most influential scientists, artists, actors, and super athletes all advocate a plant-based diet. Vegetarianism is a compassionate, ecologically sound, and spiritually uplifting lifestyle that respects the sanctity of all life. Welcome to Vegetarianism, the Noble Way of Living. We are happy to have you join us again for our interview with Dr. Richard Foltz, vegetarian author of Animals in Islamic Tradition and Muslim Cultures. Dr. Foltz is also Associate Professor of the Department of Religion in the University of Concordia in Montreal, Canada. As an authority on Islamic studies, Dr. Foltz shared with us his insights on animal rights and vegetarianism in one of the world's great religions, Islam. On today's episode, Dr. Foltz shared with us the pro-environment message in the Quran.
Welcome back. And we're talking today with Professor Richard Foltz. And as we have mentioned, Professor Foltz is an expert in Islamic and Muslim cultures and studies it extensively. And Professor, you have written a lot about environmental protection as well. How can that, with all that's going on nowadays, environmental damage, the global warming and even environmental destruction, how can we approach these issues from the Islamic point of view? Is there anything in the Islamic text that can shed some light on how we should be approaching these issues at this time?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I mentioned earlier, the Islamic texts do emphasize that creation belongs to God and not to humans. And they also emphasize that God didn't make creation just for humans. The Quran states that all creation praises God. Even if we don't understand that praise. So these birds that we're hearing in the background, they could be doing the Islamic Salat, but in their language, and we just don't understand them. That's between them and God. So that's the Quranic view. The environmental crisis is really at a very advanced stage, and most people are not aware of just how severe the crisis has become. And that includes Muslims and non-Muslims all around the world. So it's one thing to be able to say that the Islamic tradition contains a pro-environment message. But most Muslims don't see it as a central issue in the same way that most people in most cultures around the world don't see environmental degradation as a central issue. In contrast to scientists, people who really understand what's going on, and as a biologist Paul Ehrlich at Stanford said, that the environmental crisis is really the playing field on which all other human dramas are taking place, whether we realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. And that could also be because at the time of the founding of these religions, in the environment was not an issue as well, right?
I would say that at the time of the emergence of Islam into world history, the environment was very much an issue, and that's maybe part of the explanation of why it's so easy to find environmental messages in the Islamic tradition, because of course Islam emerged in the desert of the Arabian Peninsula, which is a very harsh environment with very limited resources, both in water and soil, as well as plant and animal life. And the first Muslims really did have to be very, very mindful of making sustainable use of the few resources that they did have.
Let's talk about vegetarianism.
The largest population of Muslims in the world for many centuries now has been in South Asia. There are more than twice as many Muslims in South Asia as in the Middle East, for example. And in these regions where traditionally there have been millions and millions of vegetarians, Hindus especially, in India, and some Buddhists, there have been Muslims in the past who have been vegetarian, mostly in South Asia, and one would assume there is some influence there from Hinduism and Buddhism. These things that we find in Hinduism and Buddhism are found in some Muslim groups, especially in South Asia, in pre-modern times. And particularly in Sufi groups, some of which had very close relations with some Hindu and Buddhist groups. I think contemporary vegetarianism is very much a product of the animal rights movement, which began in the UK in the early 19th century. People like Jeremy Bentham and then later Henry Salt, who were arguing for an expanded system of ethics beyond just the human species. Animal rights activists were arguing for including non-humans in the circle of moral considerability. That is to say, our ethics should also include non-humans. This is a really very modern phenomenon, which really, as I say, starts in the 19th century, and I think all animal rights and vegetarian groups in the world today have some influence from this largely North European kind of thinking from about 200 years ago. And onwards. And this is true of Muslim vegetarians today, too. Muslim vegetarians are much more likely to get their inspiration from having read Peter Singer than from having read the Quran. But having read Peter Singer and having become vegetarians for whatever moral or health reasons, as Muslims, then they want to justify their vegetarianism in Islamic terms. So then they look to the Quran and the Hadiths and they say, well, can we find teachings and values and ethics in these traditional sources which can support and reinforce our vegetarianism as Muslims? And they can, because as we said earlier, there is a message of compassion, there is a very strong a presence of animal rights in Islamic law. In fact, Islamic law, if practiced, would provide more rights to animals than contemporary Western legal systems do. But again, this is a contemporary phenomenon, and it's happening largely among Muslims in the West who are exposed to this kind of Western philosophy, this kind of moral philosophy that we have from Peter Singer and Tom Regan and people like that.
So where can Muslims who are now on this thinking of vegetarianism go for support or for guidance? Is there anything mm-hmm. out there, any information other than their teachers that they mm-hmm. can turn to?
There's very little. And in fact, prior to my book, which came out a year ago, the only substantial treatment of the question of animal rights in Islam was written by a British imam of South Asian origin who died in 1993, who was actually a lifelong vegetarian. He did publicly argue for animal rights. It wasn't till the end of his life that he actually made a short video, which was actually not very widely distributed, where he actually said that Muslims should be vegetarians. It's quite clear, in any case, to anybody who's seen this video, that that was his position, that vegetarianism was the proper moral choice for Muslims. There is a group of Muslim vegetarians today based, there's some in North America and there's some in Great Britain, who are advocating vegetarianism from an Islamic perspective, mainly over the internet. There's an Islamic Vegan Society in the UK which has a website. There is an Islamic branch of PETA in North America, based in Virginia, PETA's headquarters, which has a website called IslamicConcern.com, which is advocating vegetarianism for Muslims and providing resources for Muslims who want to be vegetarian or consider vegetarianism. Another issue which is just starting to get onto the radar screen of some Muslims, mainly again in the West, is that it's virtually impossible for a Muslim to get halal meat, that is to say meat that is Islamically acceptable. The analogy would be kosher meat for Jews. It's virtually impossible to get meat under factory farming conditions which meet the prescriptions for halal meat. And that's not really become a debate yet, but I think it's inevitable that it will be. Some Muslims are starting to pick up on this when they actually find out where their meat is coming from. Even if it has that halal label on it, on investigation it turns out to be questionable at best whether it's really met the criteria. And as that becomes more widely known among Muslims, I think it is going to be debated, but it hasn't necessarily happened yet.
Thank you for that, Doctor. We'll be right back.
He's a living creature. He's a being, just like us. Exactly. You understand? He's just a little more gifted with intuition and sharper faculty. You understand? Sometimes when you look into their eyes, my God, you feel the message coming. They're equal. Just like different kind of trees, but they're all trees. Different kind of beings, they're all beings. Just different, understand? Just like we Chinese, you American. He's a parrot, we're human.
In the DVD, The Divine Intelligence of Animals, Supreme Master Ching Hai shares her experience of adopting and caring for animals, such as parrots and dogs, during a gathering with spiritual practitioners in Florida, USA. Her boundless love and meticulous observations remind us to love our animal friends and give us a better understanding of animal spirituality and loyalty. Through Supreme Master Ching Hai's words, we find that the sentience of animals is no less than that of humans, who are the most spiritual beings among all God's creatures. Discover the true nature of our animal friends. Get the DVD, The Divine Intelligence of Animals, by visiting us online at www.smchbooks.com.
We're back, and we are continuing our discussion with Dr. Richard Foltz. And Dr. Foltz has written extensively on environment and vegetarianism. He has co-authored, edited up to 8 books at this point. And his recent work, which is called Animals in Islamic Traditions and Muslim Cultures, is now being translated into Arabic and Turkish. Dr. Foltz, what inspired you to write this book?
About 5 years ago, I started teaching a course on religion and animals, in which we look at all the different religions of the world and how they perceive the relationship between humans and other species. There wasn't anything for me to assign my students about Islam. I wrote an article at the behest of some of my colleagues who work on religion and animals. They asked me to write an article for a book that they were editing about Islam, and that led me to do more research on the topic, and then a publisher eventually asked me to write a whole book on this subject. And for several years, I tried very hard not to do it, and I recommended a number of Islamic scholars that I thought would do a better job than I would, and none of them were willing to do it. So in the end, after about 3 years of resisting, I finally broke down and wrote this book for the simple reason that there was nothing on the topic, and I thought that there really needs to be something that people could read on this subject. So I hope now that this book exists, that it will cause people to debate the issue, and that there will be more articles and books to come.
Professor Foles, I would like to thank you very much for being here today with us and sharing your thoughts and opinions on Islamic tradition and Muslim culture with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you. I would like to thank you for all of our viewers today being here with us, and I hope that you've enjoyed our program today. May Allah bless us and our beautiful planet. Thank you very much and see you next time.
And we thank you, our blessed viewers, for your company on today's episode of Vegetarianism, The Noble Way of Living. Between Master and Disciples is coming up next. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. We wish you peace and happiness.